Bring his voice and world-class leadership to the public square, telling people the truth they need to hear and fighting for revolution. And he is straight up at this historic time, putting himself forward because he is a leader who can lead us through this crazy morass and intensifying nightmare and crisis of this system to wrench out a real revolution, true emancipation for all of humanity. So don't miss this. If you're on TikTok, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, all the social media platforms, look for at Bob Avakian Official, and you can find him bringing you the truth, hard-hitting, not watered down, the truth you need regularly. Don't miss it. The other thing I want to highlight for you is that the full RNL, Revolution Nothing Less show, is available at youtube.com/therevcoms. And on that channel, you can find the full, complete, historic 3-part series interview that I did with Bob Avakian together with my co-host there, Andy Z. We interviewed Bob Avakian extensively. He spoke about his life. He opened up his heart, his history, his personal development, but also his political development. He explored the lessons and formative experience that he draws from working closely with the Black Panther Party in their most revolutionary days. He gets into how he went from being a patriotic American, thankful that he was born in what he believed was this greatest of all countries, to somebody who has become an ardent critic of this country and everything it stands for and everything it does in the world down to today, and the most fiercest advocate for an actual revolution and fighter for this revolution to bring about a world without everything America stands for and true emancipation for all of humanity. He gets into the strategy for this revolution. He gets into the future society, what it needs to look like. He gets into all the things that are holding people back, from those who are catching the hardest hell at the bottom of this society to the students on the campuses with the woke lunacy that's taking hold, but also reaching people's highest aspirations for a radically different world. He does all of this and more, gets into the poetic spirit, gets into all of this, but he is hardcore for a real revolution. And there is nothing like this journey, like these interviews. So I recommend you go to youtube.com/therevcoms. You can also find them at the website revcom.us, where you will find hundreds of articles, audio, other clips about this revolution and from this revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. There are very few people in the public square or not in the public square who would say that these are normal times, or times even close to normal, whatever that has meant. But very few realize that this is one of those rare times when revolution is more possible. And for the sake of humanity and the planet, we need to seize this moment so the resources I just gave you are indispensable in the situation we are in. So with that, let's begin with the opening commentary from the Revolution Nothing Less show.
Today's RNL show comes in the midst of an extraordinary, unique moment in a pivotal year in which there is the possibility that there will be an opening for an actual revolution in this country. On the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, we bring you why we need a revolution, why only a real revolution to overthrow the system we live under, the system of capitalism, imperialism, to overcome all the forms of exploitation and oppression, all the madness and brutality here and around the world. The RNL show brings you the voice and the leadership of the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian, B.A. Through Bob Avakian's leadership and the work he has done, there is a new framework for human emancipation, and there is a strategy for how to actually make a revolution and win it. And there is a blueprint for a new society brought into being through that real revolution in the Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America that Bob Avakian has authored. The RNL show brings you Bob Avakian because this leadership is what people here and around the world need to get free. We come to you on May 9th, 2024, in an extraordinary moment when the genocide of the Palestinian people by Israel, fully backed and supported by the U.S., is poised to take yet another, almost imaginably horrific turn, with the bombing beginning now in the border city of Rafah, where a million Palestinians were forced to flee to. We will be hearing from our reporter, Alan Goodman, on this developing situation. This is also an extraordinary moment, a moment when students in colleges and universities across the U.S. have stood up against the genocide of the Palestinian people in Gaza. As we record this week's program, almost 2,500 students in this country have been arrested for standing up and demanding that their schools and government stop supporting this genocide. Students and faculty have faced fascist thugs, paramilitary police, rubber bullets, pepper and bear spray, beatings with clubs, zip-tie cuffs so tight they suffered nerve damage. They've been thrown in city jails and held on buses and in many cases denied food, water, and toilets for many hours. Yet, all this repression has inspired tens of thousands, if not more, to rally to their support. Their actions and the vicious repression they have faced from fascists and the universities and the police have posed big questions of why is the U.S. doing what it is doing in Gaza? Why are these students meeting such vicious repression? And we RevComs have gone into the midst of this to pose how and why this struggle must broaden and deepen. And we struggle with students, and we've struggled to open a door for students to get into the movement for an actual revolution in this time when revolution could be possible. On today's show, Sansara Taylor, a host of the RNL show, will be interviewing Raphael and Amina from the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity, who were this past week unjustly arrested at UCLA. But we begin today's program with Revolutionary Internationalists May Day in Los Angeles. That happened on May 5th. The RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity also held May Day marches and rallies in Harlem, New York.
America was never great.
America was never great.
In Texas, in the Bay Area in California, and in Chicago, where they marched to an encampment in support of Palestine at the Art Institute of Chicago, where two of the RevComs were arrested. In Los Angeles, there was a rally, march, and picnic in a park in the neighborhood of South Central LA, and we're going to show you a few things that bring out the revolutionary character of this day. And then we're going to follow this with Bob Avakian on what is a real revolution.
I want to salute everyone who has come out today to say we need and we demand a whole new way to live and a fundamentally different system. Everyone who came out to say stop the U.S.-Israeli genocide against Palestinians now! Everyone who came out to say, stop capitalism, imperialism from stealing our future! A salute to everyone who came out to work for revolution and those who came out to learn more about it. A salute to our comrades in Iran, Mexico, and Colombia who have been celebrating May Day, working for the same revolution in other parts of the world that we are working for here. And a salute to the students who bravely stepped out and shook the conscience of this country and the people living in it. As we're gathered here today, Israel has been announcing its plans or its intent to carry out a further invasion of Gaza in Rafah, which is where most people have become concentrated because of the months and months of slaughter, of children being bombed to ashes, of hospitals being destroyed, of whole neighborhoods being crumbled by Israeli bombs, tanks, gunfire, all backed up and made in the USA. The Palestinian people are not just some people over there who are having this happen to. Those are our people. That is our blood being spilled. Those are our homes being destroyed. Our people are the whole people of the world who are being oppressed and who are suffering miserably under this system. And we have to fight like our future depends on it, because it does. And the students in the last week who have stood up across this country have finally exposed the sickening lie that this country is spreading somehow freedom and democracy all over the world. Think about it. Students on elite universities and campuses who are told and who are pursuing their futures in the whole framework of living in a country of liberty and justice for all, where you have the freedom to pursue your dreams and your education and your future and do whatever you want to do in the world. They stepped out and they said, we're no longer going to look on as our country supports, backs, and arms a brutal, sickening, inhumane genocide being carried out in our names. These students, if you think about it, yesterday was the 54th anniversary of Kent State, when the National Guards were sent out to shoot students who were protesting what was then a genocidal war being carried out directly by the U.S. And that generation came to be defined by people pouring into the streets to stop the Vietnam War and to oppose America's treatment of black people as it had been treating black people for its entire existence. And what these students have done here now could be part of what defines this generation of people coming out to oppose their country and saying, we are not going to accept another genocidal war being carried out in our names. And more than that, we need to push on it to make this generation actually be about that, for real. Fighting not to stop this genocide and to put an end to the system that is doing that there and is carrying out atrocities all over the world, including right here. But one more thing that we have going for us is the fact that we have not just a clear sense of what we're up against, but what we're for. Think about not just the genocide, but also think about the way students stood up here in UCLA. Just a week ago, they were descended on by Zionist fascist thugs who were carrying out brutal beatings of the encampment while the police stood aside and let this all go down. And then, in the day following that, the police were proceeded to carry out their own brutality of and beatings to drive out the students from their encampments. Think about what this system does. Despite all its talk about freedom, democracy, and rights, and compare that and think about what the new socialist republic in North America would do when we dismantle this system and replace it with revolutionary institutions and a revolutionary society. In this broadsheet, We Need, We Demand, a whole new way to live in a fundamentally different system, it outlines 6 key points of how the new society would be different. And point number 1 is a whole new dimension of freedom and rights of the people. It says the government institutions established with this new socialist constitution, including the police and military, will no longer be to contain, control, repress, brutalize, murder, and slaughter people here and all over the world. Instead, these radically new institutions will safeguard the rights of the people and give backing to the masses of people in moving to abolish all forms of discrimination and inequality, all relations of oppression and exploitation. They will defend the new emancipating society against attempts to sabotage, attack, and destroy it, and will support people throughout the world fighting for the goal of emancipation. As set forth in this Constitution for a new socialist republic in North America, the people in this new society will not only be allowed, but encouraged and enabled to fully speak their minds politically, to express themselves freely through artistic and other means, to dissent and protest with constitutional and institutionalized protection of their right to do so. They will be provided with the means for doing this, because this is an important part of creating an atmosphere where people can breathe and feel at ease, and where they will be inspired to join with others in grappling what will and what will not contribute to the emancipating transformation of society and the world as a whole. I do just want to reread and underline some things to think about. I'm not going to get into it all right now, but think about this. Not only allowed, but encouraged and enabled. And they will be provided with means for doing this. Think about this system pretends that people has the right, but even in its best, even at its, you know, highest, when things are stable and they are not so concerned about repressing people, all they can do is not violate their rights, not stop them from saying this or that. Meanwhile, the actual mouthpieces,
that are able to influence everybody's thinking and determine decision-making of this system are the ones who big media corporations, big financial institutions, big think tanks that determine the direction of things. This is talking about a new society where people have taken control of society away from the capitalists who run it now. Put the resources of society to work for social priorities, one of which will be to enable people, not just allow people, and to provide people with the means for doing this. Again, just think about that. And I'm going to read the titles of the other ones. I'm not going to get into it all, but think about all of that in relation to all of these six key outlines of how the new society will be different. A whole different economy to meet the fundamental needs and serve the highest interests. Eliminating discrimination, inequality, and oppression in every form. Education to actually educate and empower the masses of people. Healthcare to serve the people. And abolishing nuclear weapons. Finally abolishing wars. And systematically addressing the environmental crisis. Again, this is an outline and a concentration of six key ways this new socialist republic, which is outlined in the constitution authored by Bob Avakian, would be different from the society that we live in now. And this is not just a pipe dream. This is a blueprint for how, when we cast off the chains of this system and the straitjacket that it has on humanity's potential, when we finally make a revolution and dismantle the institutions of this society and get rid of that American Constitution and replace it, this is the society we could actually live in. And the revolution to do that can be made in the time we are living in now. And this is what we're doing here today to work towards. This is the opportunity that's opening up in a much bigger way in the time we live in now. This is our chance and our responsibility to the people of the world who so desperately need us to be who we need to be, to do what needs to be done right here in the belly of the beast.
So the first thing I want to say is, if you haven't, you need to join the RevCom Corps for the emancipation of humanity. You need to live for and fight for the points of attention of the revolution, especially in this rare time that you've been hearing about. But for this to happen, for it to really like happen and happen in the way that it needs to happen, because a lot of people need to like do just what I said. The people that's out here that live in this community need to, can, and must become part of this revolutionary force. But for this to happen, people got to get out of a lot of the bullshit that they're caught up in. That this system, the way the system got people like thinking and acting and get into the revolution. People in this community and communities like this everywhere got to get out of the bullshit and of fighting and killing each other and using other people, slanging a little bit of this, a little bit of that, climbing over, stepping over like each other, and just trying to survive under this dog-eat-dog system. All that goes against the interests of the masses of people. It helps to weaken, not strengthen, the revolution. People need to act to strengthen the revolution by becoming part of the force that is organizing people for this revolution. Because we got to make everyone stop and take notice that there's a force out here. There's a revolutionary alternative force out here that represents a whole new way, a whole different way that we can be, that society can be, a whole different system. A system that gets concentrated again, or gets concentratedly expressed in number two of the points of attention. We fight for a world where all the chains are broken. Women and men and differently gendered people are equals and comrades. We do not tolerate physically or verbally abusing women or treating them as sexual objects, nor do we tolerate insults and jokes about people's gender or sexual orientation. Let everybody take notice about what the revolution about this and decide how they're going to relate to this. And when we go out here in a march today, people have to see that there is a different authority, a new authority, a revolutionary authority that's concentrated like here. And the people that they see here, coming out here, prepared like to struggle like with them, or what they need to like do with their life, and how they need to become part of the revolution to emancipate humanity and get out of the bullshit that this system keeps people trapped in and caught up in. Because as Bob Avakian says, we just like saw, there's something deep down, there's deep down in people that they want like better. Well, we represent the better that they want, and it's up to us to take that to them and reach down in there and pull that out.
Revolution!
Se cuál es el problema?
El sistema, el sistema.
¿Cuál es la solución?
Revolution, revolution.
Yeah, look, I just wanted to say, I was just talking to someone over lunch, and we were talking seriously about what's going to be involved in actually making a revolution when you think about the violence that was used against the students over the last week. It was just a small taste of what they have to be able to wield against the people of the world. And think about when you're hearing these points of attention, how different this is from this world, how different it is to live this way, but also what it means to have a force that's going to fight this way for these principles. What kind of force is going to go up against this empire that fights the way it does by bombing, slaughtering, torturing, raping, conditioning their own soldiers to be mindless killing machines, pumped up with pornography to carry out slaughter against people that they are trained to see as nothing? And think about the kind of force that needs to be trained right here to lead millions to do what needs to be done when the time is right, to wage an all-out fight to bring this system down without becoming what we're fighting. A force that's actually for the emancipation of humanity and not for settling a score, getting our piece of all this, or getting back at those who have gotten at us. Think about that when you're hearing and seeing those of us who are here going to be reciting these points of attention and what it means to organize for revolution, what it means to join the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity, where you can learn more about this while you take part in working for revolution, where you learn to work with people who are just like you and nothing like you for the common cause of emancipating humanity, where you learned to become a leader yourself by learning the science of revolution and communism, and where you can have an impact that you can't have alone. An impact that you can't have just by being an individual by yourself trying to do good, but by being part of an organized, growing, disciplined, revolutionary force that is working to organize the thousands to lead millions to make a revolution in the time we live in now. So these are the points of attention for the revolution. We live by and fight for these points of attention. This is the code of the revolution. Repeat after me. Point of attention number one.
Point of attention number one.
We base ourselves on.
We base ourselves on.
And strive to represent.
And strive to represent.
The highest interests of humanity.
The highest interests of humanity.
Revolution and communism.
Revolution and communism.
We do not tolerate.
We do not tolerate.
Using the revolution.
Using the revolution.
For personal gain.
For personal gain.
Point of attention number six.
Point of attention number six.
We are going for an actual overthrow of this system.
We are going for an actual overthrow of this system.
And a whole better way beyond.
And a whole better way beyond.
The destructive.
The destructive.
Vicious.
Vicious
conflicts of today.
Conflicts of today.
Between the people.
Between the people.
Because we are serious.
Because we are serious.
At this stage.
At this stage.
We do not initiate violence.
We do not initiate violence.
And we oppose all violence.
And we oppose all violence.
Against the people.
Against the people.
And among the people.
And among the people.
Once again, let me remind you that you are listening to The Michael Slate Show. So you've dedicated your whole life over decades to making revolution and emancipating humanity. And I want to talk about revolution. It's a word that people throw around all the time. And people mean radically, very wildly different things when they use it. What is a real revolution and why is that necessary?
Well, it's not a new variation of Charmin toilet paper, okay? That's the first thing we can say. You know, it's not a change just in the culture, to be more serious. It means that you actually overthrow the existing system and replace it with a different system. That's what an actual revolution is. And yes, you know, there's a lot of confusion, a lot of people. I remember, you know, after the, I think it was Parkland shooting, you know, there was big rallies that were held, and one of the students from there, you know, got up to speak one of these big rallies, and the first thing he said was, "Welcome to the revolution," because there were, you know, large numbers, masses of people there. Well, masses of people are one important ingredient of a revolution. You don't make a revolution with a handful of people. You need, you know, millions of people ultimately to make a revolution. But the question is, what are those people fighting for? What are they aiming for? Are they aiming just to make changes within the existing system, or are they actually recognizing that you cannot bring about the positive resolution of all these different horrors that exist in this country, and we could go through them, but in the world as a whole? You know, you cannot bring about a positive resolution to that, an elimination of all that, within the confines of this system. That is another scientifically determined, evidence-based truth. And so therefore, a revolution means that you overthrow this system in order to, you know, bring into being a completely different foundation in how the economy functions, different relations among people that are not oppressive, a different culture that, instead of reinforcing all this garbage and oppression, actually reinforces emancipating relations among people and emancipating ideas among people, you know. And all the political structures also are transformed in order to serve the further transformation of society, to uproot all the underlying basis for all this exploitation and oppression. That's a revolution. Nothing short of that is an actual revolution.
You know, that he says in these interviews about having respect for people. You know, a lot of people say, well, you know, that's your opinion. Let's just have a respectable conversation and let's just end it here before we start disagreeing. But the most respect you can have for people is struggling for what's true. Struggling with people, if they are saying some bullshit, they need to be told that they're saying some bullshit. Okay? And that is, you know, with this leader, you watch the whole of that interview, he doesn't hold back. You hear, you read the works that he's actually, you know, putting forward, the social media messages. He's not holding back. He's pointing to what are the wrong terms right now. You know, where people, you know, just even at, that I want to call on people to go on these social media at Bob Avakian Official and listen to, you know, as Noche was saying, listen to the whole of those social media messages. But this leader doesn't hold back, okay? At this time when these encampments are being labeled as anti-Semitic, he actually goes at what the actual terms of what is being done in these protests and who the actual violent ones are. It is not these students. It is not the people that are protesting. It is the system that is dropping 2,000-pound bombs on our brothers and sisters in Palestine, and the people that are rising up and saying no are righteous and they need to be defended, and that kind of struggle needs to spread. And that's the concrete leadership that Bob Avakian is giving right now. And that's what people need to know about. That's what needs to spread. And that's what we, you know, who are followers of this leader, you know, proudly go out there and struggle with people about. And this is something that really pisses me off that I just have to speak to, that, you know, people label us as some brainless cult, you know, followers because we dare, how dare they go out there and just talk about one leader. Somebody told me as we were out at UCLA that how dare I wear a shirt that says BA speaks. And I just had to say, oh, I'm sorry, because I'm like some brainless idiot that has no critical thinking of herself. And she just puts on whatever the shirt and just, you know, does whatever. No, we put on this shirt very consciously. I promote the leadership of Bob Avakian very consciously. And if people have a disagreement with the content of what BA is putting forward, then bring that on the table. We're not scared of people disagreeing with the content. People need to be more talking about and struggling over what's true and how we're going to put an end to this system instead of name-calling and snarking and sniping and, you know, and telling us to get out of the campus because we're daring to get out there and bringing this leader. We were in the right place and we were talking about the damn right thing when we were out there at UCLA bringing this leadership to people that need to actually understand where this is coming from and how to end it and strengthen that movement to get to the root of why this is happening and why it is that the heavy hand of this, you know, system that so calls itself democratic and all this, until you rise up and you dare to question, you know, what they're doing, then the heavy hand of the dictatorship comes in. That's what he gets into in these social media messages. That's what we're bringing to people. That's what we're struggling with people about getting into. And that's what people need to know. And that's what we are struggling with people about. And we're not sorry about that, and we're not going to apologize about that, because we respect people enough and know that they have the ability to understand that, to themselves dig into it, and to themselves break out of the bullshit that this system trains people in thinking and taking up and living by, right? So this is, you know, this is who we are, and this is what we're representing, and we're fighting for the leadership of Bob Avakian. And this,
we're going to welcome Alan Goodman back to the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show. Alan regularly reports on the RNL show and at revcom.us on the Mideast. And for the last 6 months, Alan has been covering the Israeli genocidal war backed by the U.S. on the people of Gaza. Alan, how are you doing?
I'm angry. I'm here.
Good, good. Alan, we want to hear from you on the status of the beginning invasion of Rafah in Gaza. But first, for our viewers, I think it'd be very important if you could just briefly set the stage on where is Rafah and what's the situation in Rafah over the last few months.
So Rafah is at the, I'm going to do my hand map like I did last week. Rafah is at the very southern tip of Gaza. Gaza itself, also called the Gaza Strip, because it's only 7 miles wide, 25 miles high, before Israel's retaliatory genocidal slaughter coming off October 7th, was one of the most packed places on earth. Now, half the population of Gaza has been driven by Israeli bombs, missiles, bulldozers, starvation, disease, has been driven. This is half the population, over a million people, into the town of Rafah on the very southern tip of Gaza. And Rafah has a border crossing with Egypt and also into Israel to the east. Egypt to the south, Israel to the east. Packed into a town that had 250,000 people. Where had they been living until today, or until a few days ago? They had been living in tents, in desperate homemade tent cities, almost a million people, shoulder to shoulder in tents, without access to enough food or water to sustain them, completely dependent, and keep track of this, completely dependent on daily aid trucks coming in through two different crossings, one from Egypt at the Rafah crossing, one from Israel at the Kerem Shalom crossing.
Alan, the news is filled with maneuvering over a possible ceasefire. Biden came out on Wednesday and said that he is pausing shipment of the biggest U.S. bombs to Israel. Yet at the same time, he said he would do this if Israel launches a full-scale invasion of Rafah. But the reality on the ground in Rafah is that Israel bombed the city earlier this week, unleashing horror on top of horror that the Palestinian people packed into Rafah are suffering from. So, Alan, What do we actually know about what has happened thus far in the military phase of what could be the opening of the Israeli assault on Rafah?
Well, first, I just think we need to say, without going into trying to make any analysis or speculation, that when word hit Rafah, these people in the most desperate situations, driven from their homes to another place, driven out of that other place, leaving everything, including their dead family members, behind, 10,000 of them buried in rubble. When news spread that Hamas had signed on to a ceasefire, people were dancing in the streets. The little bit of relief they would have gotten, and then that got yanked out from under them. So that's just sadistic. That's depraved. And then instead, what people have gotten is an exponential intensification of the nightmare. The city has been thrown into panic. Bombs are dropping. And I think you may be in a position to share with viewers a map of this. Bombs are dropping all over Rafah. Explosions. There's dust in the air. People are desperately trying to save victims. People are panicky. And then I mentioned that the people driven into Rafah are day to day, hour to hour, dependent on the trickle of aid. This is the only way they get water and food, overwhelmingly. And Israel shut that down over the last couple of days. Israel sent tanks to the Rafah crossing with Egypt, and they, on their own, shut down the Kerem Shalom crossing. This means the trickle of food, water, and medical aid is not getting in. Then Israel threatened 110,000 people that the area they were living in was going to be hit with extreme force, and they needed to evacuate within hours. These are starving people. These are people who do not have modes of transportation. These are ill people. These are infirm people. These are children and elderly people. And they are being told to go to a place, 110,000 people, to go to a place that Western news agencies are reporting has no space and no water. That's a death march. That's a death march to a death camp. And it's going on right now. And the bombing, the massive bombing that's going on in Rafah, is creating a climate of terror. People know that they won't be getting the daily rations of water and food coming in. So the panic that's been set off is so widespread that even people who are not in the zone that Israel told them they had to flee out of are also fleeing. So this is hell on earth. This is the red line has been crossed. Humanity cannot stand still for this. That's the short story.
Alan, that's just like incredible. And this situation, to be very clear to our audience, that the munitions that are being dropped, the bombs that are falling on the people of Gaza, are bombs that are being provided by the United States. Intelligence is provided by the United States. This is on us as well as on the state of Israel. And this requires a ferocious response from the people in this country that has to build on what the students have been doing. And really, the students themselves, which is a big subject of our show today, we're going to get into that, have been sort of manning the barricades of conscience on this. But what I'd like you to bring out some more, Alan, is what is the overall situation in the rest of Gaza as this invasion of Rafah is going on?
Well, that's a good question. Given what I just sketched out, many people are making a call that rather than go to the so-called humanitarian zone, they will try to return to central and north Gaza, meaning Khan Yunus, the largest city in the center, and then further north to Gaza City, which, without getting into it, was, even under a brutal Israeli siege, a city of a million people, hospitals, universities, mosques, community centers, a million human beings basically reduced to rubble. and communist, pretty much the same thing. And yet, under the desperate conditions, many people are taking their chances to go back to these places. And they are places where Israel has relatively even more freedom to carry out massacres. People who follow the coverage at RevCom may remember that an Israeli supervised food distribution, supposedly in Gaza City about a month ago, ended up with Israel shooting down and killing over 100 people lining up for food. So without the intervention of humanitarian groups, without any kind of media spotlight, Israel has even more freedom in these northern cities and has left them in rubble. And yet this is where people are fleeing to. So that's the short story. It's a horror, it's a heartbreak, and that's the situation.
Finally, Alan, what is the situation in the West Bank as this is going down in Gaza?
Yeah, last week when I was on the show, you know, I used the example of a very typical situation where, first of all, a pogrom of rabid, racist, violent so-called settlers. Really a lynch mob, comparable, if you know American history, to a Ku Klux Klan assault on a black community in the Jim Crow South, descends on a Palestinian town within the West Bank, a section of historic Palestine that's occupied by Israel illegally through war. And this mob of settlers burns houses, terrorizes people, kills people. Then the Israeli army comes in. And what do they do? In the particular example I gave last week, the first two things they went after were the town bakery and the town sewage system. Well, if you're going after Hamas or Islamic fundamentalist terrorists operating in small cells, engaging in small scale shootouts with Israel on a low level, that's not what you do. If you are trying to drive the Palestinian people living in the West Bank, that is the west area to the west of the Jordan River in historic Palestine, to crush them, to drive them out. In our coverage at RevCom, we quoted a woman who was told that her house had been destroyed. She has to leave her town and said there is no place safe in the West Bank for Palestinians. So these are the kinds of conditions that people are facing. The escalated genocidal ethnic cleansing going on in the West Bank is going hand in hand with what's going on in Gaza.
Thank you, Alan, for being on the show again and for the coverage on RevCom.us. And we'll probably see you, if not next week, the week after. But we're going to keep having you on the show to update our audience.
Okay, thanks.
What's being done to the Palestinians of Gaza compounds week after week. It is this that has driven students of all nationalities, religions, and backgrounds first at elite universities and now spreading all over. Sansara Terla went out to UCLA on Wednesday, May 8th to talk with the RevCom's Rafael and Amina, who were arrested at UCLA on Monday.
All right, so we are back out at UCLA campus. There's some noise behind us because right now they are spraying down the Free Gaza graffiti that was scrawled across Royce Hall as part of the beautiful encampment against the genocide that the U.S. is backing and Israel is carrying out against the Palestinian people in Gaza. Just a week ago, there were tents, there were hundreds of people camped out, students occupying this lawn behind us. And it was part of a nationwide movement of occupations, encampments, and protest against the genocide in Gaza among students and others throughout society. I am here today with Rafael Cadaris and Amina, who were swept up and arrested on Monday morning with about 45 others here on campus as part of what is now a massive wave of arrests and repression against student protesters and others across this country. More than 2,500 have been arrested. Students have been expelled and suspended. People have been doxxed and blacklisted. Their careers and lives have been threatened. People have been sent to the hospital. They've been brutalized by police and Zionist thugs. And so we are here today to talk some about the significance of all of this. Rafael, Amina, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Sansar.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right, so I want to start out by just asking you, Rafael, how do you understand the significance of this mass wave of arrests and repression? I know that among those who've been arrested, among those who've been attacked, and among those in the broader campus community here at UCLA and actually across the country, a lot of people have been really shocked and trying to make sense of what is going on with this. Why is there such violent repression?
Yeah, it is shocking to a lot of people. And, you know, you'd think, you know, these universities claim to be centers of, you know, that value free speech, that value, you know, inquiry, that want their students to be politically engaged. You'd think these universities would be applauding their students for, you know, taking a stand and on the side of justice, you know, about something halfway across the world that doesn't affect them personally, but they're, you know, feel so strongly about it. They're opening up a conversation on campus. You'd think these universities would be applauding these students. No, these universities are sending the police after them. They're sending the CHP, California Highway Patrol. They're sending in riot police. You know, they're letting the Zionists right here on this campus, you know, brutalize students for hours while the police stand on the side. That, you know, if for people don't know, they should watch last week's episode to see how the you know, Zionists, pro-Israeli forces, hundreds of them on this campus came with bear spray. They came with, you know, metal rods and wooden pallets and tried to destroy the camp. And the students held strong in the face of this, you know. But all across this country, we're seeing, you know, at Dartmouth College, the camp that they set up, the anti-genocide, pro-Palestine divestment camp, lasted about 2 hours before the police came in and destroyed it. You know, so what is it that these university administrations, that these police, that the government, you know, Biden is spending pretty much almost every day demonizing these camps. Just the other day, he's out, you know, spreading the big lie that there's some kind of wave of anti-Semitism sweeping these college campuses. This is complete bullshit. It's not anti-Semitism. It's anti-genocide. So why is this happening? You know, it's because, as Bob Avakian has said repeatedly in his social media messages, fundamental interests of this system are at stake. Because the state of Israel plays a special role as a heavily armed bastion of support for U.S. imperialist interests in the Middle East, which is a strategic part of the world. It's where a lot of the oil gets produced. It's a crossroads of world trade. And the United States, you know, especially at the elite universities, right in the heart of the empire, they cannot allow, they cannot tolerate even any questioning of the fundamental and such a strategic interest of this system, which is what the state of Israel represents. You know, and even more than that, they are scared about a whole generation losing their allegiance to this system as a whole. You know, losing their allegiance to America, no longer being invested in the crimes that this country perpetrates all over the world, from Korea to Vietnam to Iraq to Afghanistan to right now backing a genocide in Gaza. And they are worried about students turning against this empire. You know, like happened in the 1960s, we saw how the revolts at Columbia University, at UC Berkeley, at Madison, Wisconsin, how that rippled throughout society and, you know, radicalized the whole generation, and they can't tolerate that.
Amina, I understand that I want to talk more about some of the conversations you had with people in jail while being detained and all of this, but one of the things I understand came up was a question of whether all the media coverage about the encampments and the attacks and the arrests on the encampments, whether this is a distraction taking people's eyes off of Gaza. And how do you understand that? How do you speak to that?
I mean, the simple answer is it's not a distraction. It's actually a great inspiration. You know, millions and millions of people are seeing exactly what he was working through. You know, students at elite institutions, you know, putting everything on the line, their careers, their jobs, their future, and really to take a stand, to take a basic stand that they are in opposition to this genocide, and really calling and insisting that their universities, that their peers, that others actually take a stand, and really drawing a dividing line by, like, sleeping out, camping out, you know, and really, like, you know, putting a lot of sacrifice, you know, on to to the side and saying, no, we're not going to be complicit in the face of like a tremendous crime against humanity, you know. And I think that is the lesson that people have to draw from this, you know, that with great inspiration and take lead from that. And it is the reality that the resistance does need to grow, you know. And I think that's sort of the moral position that they're taking. And I think that everybody actually needs to grab hold of that lesson and stand with them and grow in our millions to actually put a stop to this.
I want to go back to some of the people, and both of you could speak to this, but some of the students that you were locked up with, zip-tied for hours the other morning. And what were some of the conversations like? How were they processing? Who were they? What had motivated them?
I mean, one thing to clearly understand, these are people students that 2 weeks ago, like, had never done anything like this, you know, had never actually felt like I have to take a political stand against what this government is doing. And it was heavy, you know. It's not like people woke up that morning and go, oh, I'm going to go get arrested. They were like, what is my mom going to think? I can't show my face on camera, you know, like I can't, you know, oh my God, who's my emergency contact? I have no, you know, please don't call my mom. Like that was actually, you know, or people were weighing like, oh my God, you know, I really want to graduate. Is this going to stay on my record? Well, and kind of really at the same time, you know, two conflicting thoughts at the same time going, well, you know what? It doesn't matter. You know, like I am here and I am taking the correct stand against, you know, against a genocide. And that is actually more important than anything that I have to personally go through. You know, you had different contingents of students, you know, even a theater group student that were just like, you know, we're singing, we're trying to memorize the legal number through song. We're also going like, you know, okay, what's the perfect, you know, song for this occasion, you know, and start, we go, they're like Willie Nelson. No Les Mis, like we just have to, you know, just really trying to keep the enthusiasm up, you know, of like just how correct we are. And people are also saying, you know, wow, this university fears us. They fear us. You know, the only way that they have to respond to this is by arresting us. You know, we are strong, and just everybody kind of having each other's back and saying like, no, you know, we're up against something much bigger than just, you know, our individual, you know, kind of sacrifices. We're up against, you know, kind of, we're here together and we're up against, you know, kind of, it's standing in opposition to this genocide. And that actually matters, you know.
Well, I think that's important. And people are going through really big changes really fast. This is not only a turning point period in this society, in history, it's also a turning point for many people in their own lives who are finding themselves inspired by others and outraged by an atrocity and crime against humanity, putting themselves doing things they never anticipated, acting in ways they never expected they would, finding courage they never thought they'd find. And now we have a whole generation being shaped by this, and 2,500 among them, including the two of you, you arrested on both coasts now in this upsurge, who have been arrested and who actually are an important moral force. They're facing charges, they're facing heavy stakes, many of them, but there's also something very important we raise the demand that the charges be dropped against all the protesters, that all of the students get amnesty on their suspensions, expulsions, that we have the backs of everybody who's come under attack for this. And what's the importance of building the political defense for those who've been arrested and for everybody else as part of strengthening the fight to stop this genocide?
Yeah, well, I think it is important that, you know, many of the protest movements throughout the country have also raised the demand for amnesty. There's faculty, you know, who have signed petitions demanding charges be dropped and suspensions be dropped on these students. Everywhere people have been arrested, there's been jail support. All this is really important part of the defense. But I think it's also important that we recognize that the defense of these 2,500 people who've been arrested and more every day that are being arrested, this can actually be turned into offense. Offense against this genocidal war, you know, offense against this system that would throw protesters trying to stop a genocide in prison. You know, we got to use this as an opportunity to expose the crimes of Israel and the United States before the whole world. We have to use this as an opportunity to expose the fact that, you know, for all their talk of rights, and we should fight for the rights that we do have, you know, when are the rights that have been blatantly violated, we should fight, you know, on the legal grounds, which we do have. Almost everywhere we've gone, the police, you know, almost everywhere people have been arrested, the police have blatantly violated people's legal rights, their right to assemble, their right to free speech, their right to protest, all this. But even more, we got to expose the bankrupt nature of a system that would throw people trying to stop a genocide in jail, that would suspend them, that would expel them. And I just have to say, you know, when we make a revolution and get rid of this system and bring it to being a whole new socialist society based on the Constitution for the new socialist republic written by the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian, if there were people, including, you know, pro-Israel people or pro-America people who rallied on a college campus like this in opposition to the socialist government, we would allow that to happen. We would encourage it. We would use it as an opportunity to open up a debate about what kind of society we want to live in. You know, this should be a, you know, things like this are actually, you know, in opposition to the idea that these student protesters are disrupting education. This is one of the best educational experiences to actually learn about the world and learn about, you know, what's really going on, why it's happening, where the real interests of humanity are. So let's come to the defense of these people who are under attack in these trials, and I mean, in these legal cases. And let's use it as an opportunity to expose this system and to get the real interests of humanity out before the eyes of the world. And let's beat these charges.
So I want to thank you, Raphael and Amina, for being out in the streets with so many others demanding an end to this genocide, spreading the word about revolution, standing strong in the face of things brought down on both of you, and for coming here on the Revolution Nothing Less show to talk to us today. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. And thank you also for being on the front lines. I know you were here when all this went down at UCLA, too.
Yes.